Well, let's let me begin, if I may. I wanted to mention this yesterday and forgot, and I just wanted to offer my condolences to Tony Blankley's family. I knew him reasonably well. We spent a lot of time in green rooms together. A very decent gentleman and smart man who served both the Reagan administration and then Speaker Newt Gingrich well. We will miss him. I will personally. I would also like to say a few things about the the American automobile industry. Yesterday, the North American International Auto Show kicked off in Detroit, Michigan, with companies unveiling their new vehicles and folks eager to get their first peek. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood was on hand for the opening events, and Commerce Secretary John Bryson, Energy Secretary Stephen Chu, EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson, and the Labor Department's Director of the Office of Recovery for Auto Communities and Workers, Jay Williams, are all taking part in auto show activities this week. The auto show is a reminder to me, and I'm sure to you, of the fact that in the face of stiff opposition, the president made a tough choice to help provide the auto industry with the temporary support it needed to rebuild their companies and get moving again. This was a difficult decision, and it came with significant risk, but the president was not willing to walk away from those workers and to allow the great American automobile industry disappear. Today, that industry is coming back, creating jobs and moving cars off the line. Last month, the automotive industry added nearly 11,000 positions, bringing the total number of jobs added in the fourth quarter of 2011 to 36,000. The industry added 100,000 jobs over the course of 2011. In December, we saw auto sales climb for the seventh consecutive month, and the big three, Ford, GM, and Chrysler, all saw sale increases for December and the year as a whole. Since Chrysler and GM emerged from bankruptcy in June of 2009, the auto industry has added back more than 170,000 jobs, the best period of job growth for that industry in more than a decade. I would also note that, as many of you know, that one of the positive signs we've seen of late, among other positive signs for the economy, is the growth in manufacturing. And while the automotive industry makes up 5% of manufacturing in this country, it is responsible for 25% of that rebound in manufacturing. So another reminder of why it was so important to make the decision the president made to rescue the American automobile industry a few years ago. With that, I will go to the Associated Press. Jim.
Thank you, Jay. I wanted to go back to yesterday's surprise personnel announcement. Mr. Daley had earlier indicated he would stay through January even of next year, and he was supposed to build relations with Republicans, build relations with the business community. What prompted his sudden decision to leave, and did he get to accomplish that? You don't seem to have the strong relations that maybe he intended to build in as he came in.
First of all, Jim, I appreciate the question, and I think this is a case where it's important and accurate to take at face value what Bill Daley said in his letter of resignation to the president, and what the president said yesterday in announcing this transition. 2011 was an extraordinary year, in a rather extraordinary 3 years of this president's first term. Even before he had officially taken the job, the day after he was announced, if I recall correctly, he was here in the White House doing some paperwork associated with taking over as chief of staff when the news came that there had been a shooting in Tucson, Arizona. He found himself in the Situation Room with the president as that terrible news unfolded. And from that day on, Bill Daley proceeded to help the president navigate an extremely event-filled and difficult year for Washington and for the country. A year that included the Arab Spring, events in Egypt and Libya and the rest of the Middle East, the tsunami and earthquake and tsunami in Japan, a near government shutdown, a extraordinarily impressive and important mission to remove Osama bin Laden from the face of the earth, the very tough negotiations with Congress over the debt ceiling increase and deficit reduction that resulted despite not achieving the grand bargain that the President and Bill Daley sought so aggressively, nevertheless locked in $2.2 trillion in deficit reduction. In the fall, he helped oversee the President's American Jobs Act proposal, which by the end of the year resulted in several provisions passing, including, most importantly, the extension of the payroll tax cut and unemployment insurance. These jobs are difficult. People talk about how a year in the White House, and the West Wing in particular, is you can measure it in dog years. This one was particularly jam-packed. And as the President said in his announcement in the state dining room, but also to us in a staff meeting, in a senior staff meeting, he is extremely grateful for Bill's leadership and for his friendship.
What does it mean about the White House's outreach to the business community, though, and to Republicans? He seemed to be your best opportunity to do that. What does it mean going forward?
Going forward, with Jack Lew at the helm, we have someone who for decades has had excellent relations with both Democrats and Republicans, is broadly respected throughout Washington for his service in the House of Representatives, for then Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, for his service in the Clinton administration, as well as his service here at the State Department and as Director of OMB. I think if you ask any member of Congress, Republican or Democrat, who's dealt with Jack Lew, they will testify to the fact that he is a total straight shooter and knows how to work with both members on both sides of the aisle. And he also, to the point about business, has got a lot of respect in the business community. So there is continuity in that respect. The President, as I've said and he has said, is absolutely committed to working with Congress this year to get more accomplished for the American people. And we remain optimistic that opportunities will present themselves to do just that. There are things that have to get done, like the extension of the payroll tax cut and extension of unemployment insurance for the full calendar year. There are other things that really should get done if members of Congress are listening to their constituents. Putting construction workers back to work, rebuilding our infrastructure, is a key component of the American Jobs Act that could really help our economy, help folks who are out of work now go back to work, rebuilding our bridges and highways and schools and other things, and working on projects that help our economy grow well beyond the duration of the project they're working on. So Jack Lew will be intimately involved in that process. I think it is, while it was, as the President said, a surprise that Bill decided that this was the right time for him to go back to Chicago, a town he loves dearly, as does the President. If I could digress, I mean, I don't think there's another family like the Daleys more closely associated with a great American city. So the connection there is extremely strong. And while this was a surprise for the President, the fact is it is because he has somebody like Jack Lew who can step right in and fulfill the Chief of Staff's role that we will not miss a beat here in the West Wing.
You mentioned continuity. How quickly do you want to, does the President want to get a new budget director, and how do you get over a confirmation hump given the toxic environment with Congress?
Well, I don't have any announcements to make on Jack's replacement at OMB. He will be staying there to finish the 2013 budget. In addition to Jack, there is a very talented team, senior team there at the OMB that will function as effectively as they have under his leadership after he's gone. And once the President makes a decision about leadership at OMB, we'll have an announcement for you.
But does he want to have somebody in shortly after the budget?
Yeah, I don't have
before the payroll tax?
I don't want to go any further than I have. I don't want to get ahead of any announcement the President might make. Let me move around. Mike.
Thank you. There was a GAO report that came out the other day, and one of the conclusions that it found was that in the press releases the Treasury has put out regarding the TARP, it tended to highlight areas.
Regarding the what, sorry?
in regarding press releases put out by the Treasury regarding TARP. That they tended to highlight those areas where TARP was making a profit, if you will, bringing money into the government, but not the areas where the TARP was losing money for the government. Mm-hmm. Do you have any response to that?
I'm not aware of the report, Mike. I think we've been very straightforward about how much TARP has cost, what its the projected cost was versus what the actual cost has been, and where money has been paid back. And that's true also of the automobile industry. I'm not aware of any discrepancies with regard to that, but I'm not familiar with the report. Yes, Matt.
Back on Jack Lew. Does the president have a short list, or is he, do you have a time frame in which he will come up with a short list for a successor for Jack Lew?
I have no announcements on that, and no estimation of the length of the list for you. I'm sure there's a list.
Would the president consider a recess appointment, using a recess appointment in light of the likely Republican opposition?
I'm not going to speculate on that.
One last, there are reports that the president plans to create a government task force to monitor China for trade and other business violations, and that he plans to announce this around the time of the State of the Union address. Can you confirm that?
I don't have any announcements today on any new administration task forces or efforts on that issue. What I can tell you is that we will continue to work to take the steps necessary to level the playing field for American workers and businesses. You've heard the president speak about this repeatedly, and he did so on his trip to the Asia-Pacific region not that long ago, where he made it clear that he will continue to stand up for American workers and businesses. As you know, Secretary Geithner is in Beijing today, and that is part of our constant discussions with China, as well as our friends and partners in the region, about the importance of the Asia-Pacific region and the importance of our economic relations with that region. Yes, sir.
The Iranians apparently have confirmed to the Swiss, who are protecting power, that they've sentenced the American captive to death. Mm-hmm. Has the administration heard anything? Have you responded, and how, to the Iranians through the Swiss? What's new?
Well, I don't have anything new for you in terms of communications through the Swiss from us, but we, our position is what it was yesterday, which is that the charges, the allegations against Mr. Hekmati are false. This is not the first time, though we could only hope it would be the last, that the Iranians have falsely accused people of being spies. We urge his immediate release, and are working towards that end, and hope that it happens soon.
Now that you know he's been officially sentenced to death, mm-hmm. what's the response?
Well, that is the response. It's absolutely, the allegations are false, the sentence is absurd and wrong, and we urge his release. Ken.
Jay, next week, King Abdullah comes to the White mm-hmm. House, and it won't be his first visit. They'll be talking about the efforts to jumpstart the Middle East peace process, we presume. Again, not the first time they've talked about that. Mm-hmm. Will there be any new approaches this time? What will they try this time that they have not tried before?
Well, as you know, the president has already thanked King Abdullah for hosting the resumption of talks. They will obviously discuss that issue. They will discuss the king's efforts at reform in Jordan, and they will discuss the host of issues affecting the region. So it won't be limited simply to the Middle East peace process, although that will certainly be part of it. I don't have anything new to report about our approach to that very difficult issue, our commitment to doing everything we can, working with our partners to urge both sides to come together and negotiate a peace. Remains very strong, and we will continue to work with Jordan and other nations toward that end.
Are you satisfied with the King's commitment to working to try to get things solved in a more peaceful way in Syria?
Well, I mean, you know our position on Syria. We've been working with a variety of and a long list of nations, friends, partners, and allies around the region and the globe to put pressure on the Syrians, to put pressure on President Assad, whose legitimacy has long since been lost because of the wretched violence he's perpetrated upon his own people. And our position on that certainly hasn't changed. Yes, Brianna.
And then Christy. Democratic Senator Robert Menendez is blocking the president's nomination of Judith Schwartz to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, and some suspect it's because her longtime partner is the head of that corruption unit that investigated him. Is the president concerned there's any sort of revenge going on here?
You know, Brianna, I honestly don't. I don't have anything on that. We obviously want to see all of the president's nominees considered in a timely manner, and we would like this nominee also to be considered in a timely manner. But I don't have anything specific on this particular nomination or those stories.
But isn't it strange? It's a Democrat that's getting in the way.
I don't have any particular comment on this. Whatever obstacles are presented by members of the Senate to nominees, we are always disheartened by those. The president's put forward very qualified nominees, including the woman you're referring to right now, and they ought to be considered on the merits.
Has the senator, he said he has substantive concerns. Has he voiced those to the White House?
Not that I'm aware of, but I haven't had a lot of in-depth discussions about that here. Yes.
India is planning to pay in Indian rupees under a new financial mechanism with Iran. And Pakistan is going ahead with building the Pakistan-Iran pipeline. So is the White House worried about these leaks in enforcing the sanctions on Iran?
Well, we are working with our partners and allies around the country to enforce the sanctions and to take a multilateral approach, an approach that we hope will maximize the impact of the sanctions without creating any unintended consequences, any negative impacts on the oil markets or on our allies. And we are engaged in that effort right now. Christy.
Can you say what Bill Daley's role with the campaign will be and when it will begin?
I don't have a specific announcement on that. I know that he will be, I mean, I would expect the campaign would have that, but I'm sure he will be very involved. He was involved last time, and I'm sure it will be a suitably high-profile role. He is very committed to this president and to his reelection, to the policies that the president's put into place in the last year with Bill's help, and to ensuring that all the work that has been done to pull this country out of the worst recession since the Great Depression, to put it on a path towards growth and job creation and greater security for the middle class continues. And I know that Bill will be very involved in the reelection campaign.
And is he traveling with the president tomorrow to Chicago? Do you know?
I don't know for sure, although I wouldn't be surprised if he were. Yes?
Jay, I wanted to ask on Jack Lew Bill Daley. When Bill Daley was named a year ago, the president made a point of saying, as a business guy, as you were talking with Tim about, you know, he had created jobs, he was the CEO of several companies. Why then, since you also told Jim that Jack Lew has good ties to the business community, why didn't the president mention yesterday Jack Lew's private sector experience being a hedge fund executive at Citigroup?
I don't know that there's an answer to why. Jack's resume is quite long. It is most notable for the fact that he was budget director twice, and in his first stint is, as the president mentioned, the only budget director in history to oversee 3 years of surpluses, surpluses that were quickly squandered in the years that the next administration was in power. And that as his tenure here, both at the State Department and here in the White House, as director of OMB for the second time, has been stellar. So, but it is also true that he has private sector experience as a manager at a private firm, and I think that is part of a very broad resume.
When
When he was a manager at that private firm, the Huffington Post, which is not usually very critical of the administration, said that he ran Citigroup's alternative investments division, which made billions of dollars by, quote, betting that U.S. homeowners would not be able to make their mortgage payments.
Well, Jack was a management executive. He was not an investment advisor at Citigroup. So
he was the chief operating officer, I believe, was the title of the
not an investment advisor. He didn't make investment advice.
But how does that, running a business like that or helping to run a business like that, how does that square with what the president's been talking about with Richard Cordray and the administration's going to be really tough on the big banks, when the new White House chief of staff is somebody who used to be at one of those big banks?
Ed, I would suggest to you that you're tilling very fallow ground here, but I appreciate the effort. We believe very strongly in the fact that the American financial industry needs to be successful and robust. It's an important part of the American economy. It also needs to follow the same rules as Wall Street. I mean, as Main Street. Wall Street needs to go by the same rules as Main Street. That's why the president pushed so hard to pass and sign into law Wall Street reform. That's why he pushed so hard, since you raised it, to get Richard Cordray confirmed. And when Senate Republicans, despite his obvious qualifications, refused to allow an up or down vote on Richard Cordray, the president felt he had no other alternative but to make a recess appointment, one of the relatively few recess appointments he has made as president compared to his predecessors. Because this country needs the middle class here in this country, folks who engage with non-bank financial institutions like payday lenders and non-bank mortgage brokers and things. They need somebody here in town watching out for them, looking out for their interests. So the president is absolutely committed to the mission that CFPB has and to the mission that Richard Cordray specifically has. Yes.
How will Jack Lew and Pete Rouse split up their duties?
I think we will wait until Jack takes over as chief of staff, which will not be before the end of the month. He has some loose ends to tie up as OMB director, and he will obviously make some decisions about how his office is structured going forward. But you know, Pete is an invaluable senior advisor to the president. His role under Bill Daley was highly effective in terms of helping the operations of the West Wing run smoothly. And I am very confident that Pete will continue to be, one of the most valuable players here in the West Wing.
And I know that the transition is still taking place, but has it been determined who the point person for Congress will be at this point?
I'm sorry, for what?
For Congress. Who will be the lead person? Who will we see sort of leading, you know, when we revisit the payroll tax cut debate, for example? Who will take the lead on that?
I mean, we have a variety of folks who engage in that, but we do have our head of legislative affairs is Rob Neighbors, who, speaking of most valuable players, might be my top vote getter. But he will, as he has, take the lead in that effort.
But, I mean, Jack Lew as the chief of staff will obviously have a large role as well.
Well, no question. No question. And it's important to remember in terms of, you know, Jack's legacy at OMB is that he was intimately involved in that process last fall and in December to bringing that agreement finally to fruition with Congress that it allowed for the extension of the payroll tax cut to make sure that 160 million Americans didn't see a tax hike as a New Year's Day present. And he will be intimately involved in the effort to ensure that Congress does the right thing without drama and extends it for the full year.
One political insider described the timing of this as switching places in a canoe in rough waters. How does the administration see the timing of this, given that you are headed into a tough re-election year?
Well, I would disagree with that description because of what I think I told Jim, which is that Bill's leadership has been exceptional through a very challenging year. Jack's been there. He has, I think it's important to remember, been a participant in the 7:30 meeting, as you know, the meeting of the most senior staff in the chief of staff's office every morning. Jack has been there every morning. He he will, I think, as much as anyone possibly could, slide pretty effortlessly and seamlessly into that role. He's widely respected here inside the West Wing and the broader White House, just as he is up on Capitol Hill. And for those of you who know him, he is just about as decent and smart an individual as you will ever encounter here in Washington. Yes, Celia.
The Supreme Court today is hearing arguments on indecency and broadcasting. As you know, this administration supports those stricter standards. But would you at all agree with critics who say you can log on to the internet anytime during the day, you can turn on cable television at any time and see and hear these images that are being questioned right now? And in any way, would you concede with these critics who say there's no need for the government to take stricter controls over broadcasting in this day?
I confess that I have not looked into this issue, so I don't want to venture an opinion, except to say that as a parent, you know, you always have to weigh concerns about exposing kids to things as a parent you'd otherwise you'd rather not have them exposed to. But I'll have to take your question in terms of the broader issue because I wasn't aware of it. Yes.
Forum. Can you tell us more about, I guess, what the president wants to learn out of that? Is this, I know it seems like an idea
sure.
session, but is he trying to come up with ways, you know, this is the groundwork for in the future, possibly ideas to spur more, I guess, insourcing or foreign direct investment?
Absolutely. He wants to hear from the executives who will be part of this forum, participating in it, and who are examples of major American companies that have brought jobs back to the United States. You know, why they did that, what were the incentives to doing that, and he's very interested in ideas that go to just your question, which is, you know, what can we do to further develop this trend, which has American companies that are international and global companies that do have factories and installations abroad. And employ a lot of people abroad. What kind of incentives can be created to bring those jobs back to the United States that keep the companies highly competitive, keep them making the best products in the world with American labor when that's possible and when that makes sense. So absolutely, this will be a two-way session where ideas are exchanged, as well as the fact of insourcing and reinvesting in America is noted and celebrated.
Bring or I guess announce any ideas related to that, or just kind of talk to the.
I'll let him make whatever announcements he might want to make tomorrow, but I think it'll be an important event, and it goes to what I've been talking about and he's been talking about for a long time now, which is that he is committed to doing whatever he can, working with the private sector, using his executive authority, working with Congress to further grow the economy, to get the economy creating more jobs. As we dig ourselves out of this terrible recession. And this is an important aspect of this. I noted at the top, the decision he made about the automobile industry to rescue it and why that has paid dividends and why it was the right thing to do. And, there are a variety of decisions and levers that a president can pull, decisions he can make and levers he can pull to help that cause. And this president's committed to exercising all his options with regard to growing the economy and creating jobs. Alexis and Mark.
The president recently went to CFPB and was a booster for the employees there. He's doing the same thing at EPA this afternoon, something similar, celebrating the employees there. Is he going to continue to do that around the executive branch? It seems like he's sort of rediscovered that he has these career people who are keeping the government operating.
Well, I think he's keenly aware of the high level of the high quality of people working out in the agencies doing exemplary work for the American people. And I don't want to preview or predict other visits he might make, but he is noting important work that people are doing. And at his visit today, I'm sure, is about that and focus. You know, the EPA played an integral role in the automobile efficiency standards, fuel efficiency standards that were announced by the president as he was surrounded by close to a dozen automobile executives, automobile company executives. EPA was integral in that. EPA was obviously play the lead role in the mercury standards that were released after more than a decade, maybe two decades of work on that. Mercury, as you know, is a very dangerous neurotoxin, and those standards are very important to the health and welfare of American children and American citizens across the country. So he will thank them for their hard work and thank them for the work to come.
Just to follow up, is he at all concerned that some of his decisions recently seem to have gone against EPA's direction? And does he feel like he's trying to maybe boost their morale about his support for their work?
Look, I think you were more on target in the first part of your question about taking note of the often unheralded work that really talented Americans do at some of these agencies. And the work they do on behalf of the American people, and with regard to the EPA, which, you know, is often under siege, but is responsible for ensuring that the air we breathe, that our children breathe when they run out on the soccer field, is clean, and that the water they drink is clean and not harmful, do really important work. And you know, this is an agency that was created under President Nixon, people forget. And has been responsible for ensuring the health and safety, in many cases, of millions of Americans. So I think he'll note that. Roger Reagan.
Thank you. You mentioned Mr. Geithner being in China a few minutes ago. One of the things that he's doing is asking China to reduce imports of oil from Iran. Are there some indications that China might do that, or what arguments is the administration making to convince them?
I would just refer you to the answer I gave about sanctions on Iran generally and our efforts multilaterally to work with our friends and allies around the globe in that effort to ensure that they are implemented in a way that has maximum effect maximum designed effect and the fewest number of unintended consequences. So, we'll be having that discussion with leaders of numerous countries, allies, and partners around the world as regards that effort with Iran.
But you don't have any indications that they might proceed to
I don't want to get ahead of either Secretary Geithner's conversations or other conversations we may or may not be having with the Chinese. I mean, you know, the Secretary's portfolio and his dealings with China is certainly broader than that.
Real quick question, the debt ceiling increase, does that need to go to the Hill this week?
I don't have a specific announcement for you. I'm confident it will be executed in a matter of days, not weeks. Mark, did you have something?
That was it.
Mr. Landler, did you have something?
I do. Speaking of Mr. Geithner, when the Treasury Secretary indicated to the President that he wanted to go home to New York, the President leaned on him exceptionally hard to stay on the job. I'm wondering why that case is different than the case of the Chief of Staff. I understand he asked him to sleep on it, but that's a very different order of pressure than he brought to bear on the Treasury Secretary. Why is it easier to let this happen than it was to let that happen?
Well, look, I think you're talking about I'll simply address the Daley decision. Daley without the I. Bill is, for those of you who know him, you know, I think he made up his mind, believed it was the right time. And yes, the President did ask him to reconsider, to sleep on it, to think about it, and they would talk again the next day. But Bill had made his decision, and the President respected that, and he understood, in particular, perhaps because of their shared love of Chicago and as their mutual hometown, that and understanding Bill's connection to it, why he would want to return to Chicago. And let's, you know, I point out here that Bill will continue to be a very important part of the team in the broader effort here in terms of the President's reelection, and will be available to give advice to the President. And I'm sure, as the President noted, he will be calling Bill for advice going forward. But I think Bill was very clear about what his decision was.
It would have been the President's clear preference for him to stay through this year.
I think we've established that the President was surprised and but completely understood Bill's decision, was gratified by the fact that both he and Bill had the same thought, which is that Jack Lew would be an excellent successor to Bill as Chief of Staff, and gratified by the fact that, Jack Lew was, if you will, standing by and ready to be able to take that take on those responsibilities and to do so seamlessly.
Just one last question on this. Did the President make a sort of a persuasive, impassioned case to Mr. Daley? You know, this is why we've got so much left to do together. Please think about staying on. I know you may not love it, but anything like that?
I don't have a further readout of that private conversation or conversations, because there was more than one. I mean, I think we've unveiled the TikTok with a fair amount of detail, but I don't have any more for you. Anne, yeah.
Is the President concerned that any other senior members of the administration might choose to leave during this year? Has he done what some of his predecessors have done, asking senior staff, senior cabinet-level people to stick with it for an election year to bring continuity, keep continuity for the administration?
I don't think the President is concerned about staff turnover. He knows that everybody here is committed to this enterprise, to helping the American people, helping him help the American people, helping him do what he can do as president to grow the economy and create jobs and keep Americans safe, both here and abroad. Transitions are an inherent part of, as you know, Anne, you've covered several White Houses, you know that the transitions are a part of it. These are demanding jobs. I mean, think about what flows through the corridors and offices here. Every decisions of enormous global impact are made every day, and the pressure is significant. The privilege is profound, but these are not jobs that people occupy for long periods of time. That's always been the case, and especially in this White House, where the chiefs of staff, in all cases, have been and will be empowered and have significant portfolios and responsibilities. These are tough jobs, and the President appreciates Bill's service just as he greatly appreciated Rahm Emanuel's service.
Isn't that exactly the point, that because of the sensitivity and the import of these jobs, if the top person in a presidential campaign leaves, it's interpreted as a problem with the campaign or disruption? Is that not applicable to the White House?
I don't think it is, and because of the kind of team that this President has assembled that allows for this transition, which I accept is a big one, it's the Chief of Staff, but allows for it to be as smooth as it will be because of the exceptional qualifications and temperament that Jack Lew brings to this job. So I think this will be exceptionally smooth and seamless. And I think that's because of the way that Bill has effectively been Chief of Staff, or the way that the President has dictated to his senior staffers how they ought to conduct their business, and because of the kinds of men and women the President has surrounded himself with. I just ended a sentence with a preposition.
That's all right. We'll forgive you if I could ask one two-part question.
NPR. I can tell you that the President has asked, and she has accepted, Cecilia Munoz to be the next White House Director of Domestic Policy. Cecilia, as you know, has served as the Deputy Assistant to the President and Director of Intergovernmental Affairs, where she has overseen the Obama administration's relationships with state and local governments. As IGA Director under Valerie Jarrett, Ms. Munoz leads a partnership between federal, state, local, and tribal governments that Governing Magazine described as, quote, more prominent and responsive than it ever was, citing praise from local and state elected officials from across the political spectrum. Cecilia has enormous experience and brings a great deal of policy knowledge and intellect to this position, and the President is greatly appreciative of the fact that she's willing to take on this important job. Anybody?
You again?
Go ahead.
Three in one day, I'm looking down. Do you think this will help, I guess, outreach to the Hispanic community, considering her prior role?
I think Cecilia is the best person for the job, and she has done great work at IGA. She's, for those of you who know her and know how what an effective advocate she is for the president's policies and how knowledgeable she is of about the whole set of domestic policy issues that any White House confronts and that this president has been dealing with for the past 3 years. Yes.
Thank you.
No, I'm sorry. Hold on.
Oh, I see.
I want to keep it clean, Lester, so I'm going here.
You want to keep it clean? Oh, my.
Following the latest action by Iran and now Syria's, coming out against pressure against his regime, has the White House had conversations with their allies about increasing the pressure that they're putting on the two governments and maybe being
on, I'm sorry, on Iran and?
On Iran and Syria both, and maybe stepping it up and being a little more aggressive in the pressure that they're putting?
Well, the answer is absolutely. We have been working quite aggressively with the international community, with our partners and allies around the world to put pressure on Syria and put pressure and isolate Iran, and in both cases, and obviously the with regards to Iran, this is an ongoing effort. We have effectively isolated Iran to a degree that has never before been the case, and the impact of the sanctions and the efforts that we've implemented is profound, as every report out there has recognized. And we will continue to work with our allies to do that, to get Iran to behave, to live up to its international obligations, and in the case of Syria, to pressure President Assad to cease the violence against his own people and to step aside so that the Syrian people can have the democratic transition that they demand and deserve.
Include military action?
You know, I have said with regards broadly to these questions that the president, of course, takes no option off the table, but that we are focused in both cases on diplomatic, economic, and other non-military actions that we can take to bring about the results that we and many, many countries around the world, our international partners and allies, are demanding.
My last question is, a lot of people in the region are wondering what more it can take from these regimes to do to, I guess, see a military or strong response from the U.S. and its allies.
I think that, again, we take no option off the table. It is not, I would just say that. We take no option off the table. We are pursuing, at this point, diplomatic, economic, and other means to bring about the results that we and so many other nations are demanding with regards to Iranian and Syrian behavior. Sorry, behind Chris. Tell me. Nadia, of course.
Can you confirm that President Saleh of Yemen is no longer requested to come to the U.S., and when was the last time that you've been in touch with?
I don't think I have an update on that. Let me see. Let me just double check and see if it's changed. You know, I just don't have an update on his application status for you. To my understanding, it hasn't changed. But if it has, I'll take that for you.
Can you please, because sure. The news that he's going to Saudi Arabia now instead of coming to the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So I'll check on that. I mean, but that what his decisions might be about where he might be going may not necessarily be related to his application status for a visa here. Chris.
Just one.
Chris.
Yeah. Yesterday, Rick Santorum said that he and the president have the same view on same-sex marriage. What's the president's response to candidates using his position?
I think, Chris, you know very well that what the president's views are on LGBT issues and civil rights, and the president is very proud of this administration's record on those issues. But the
question is about marriage.
But I have no updates for you on the president's position on same-sex marriage. I think that you know, and others here know and understand that his position broadly on LGBT issues is quite significantly different from that particular candidate's views.
Thanks.
Neil, last one. Yeah.
Thanks, Jay. I have just two quick questions. First one, Mitt Romney told supporters at an event that that he knows what it's like to worry about getting pink slipped. And they're commentating a lot of attention. I'm wondering if the president had a reaction to that and if he's ever had to worry about, had that sort of anxiety himself. Do you know of a time when that happened?
I would point you to his memoir. I'm not, I haven't had that discussion with him, and I have not discussed those remarks with the president.
And to follow up, here's a question. Over the weekend, Sarah Palin tweeted out something similar, but the language that she used was very specific. She said the president's position on the definition of marriage is the same as Santorum's, Gingrich's, and Romney's.
Now, again, I would just point you to the answer I just gave. I will just point you to what the president has said and his record.
He said before that he believed that marriage was between one man and one woman years ago. And now he says his position is evolving. Would it be fair to say that that definition no longer exclusively?
Again, I don't have anything new to give you on this. I appreciate the question, but the president's spoken to it. I'm sure he'll be asked again about it, but as of now, I have nothing new for you on it. Thank you all very much.